So I'm supposed to do a disclosure first. Let's do here. Nothing to disclose. Well, environmental justice deals with such issues as the siting of toxic chemical plants in poor neighborhoods, like in Cancer Alley along the Mississippi River, or Union Carbide isocyanide plant in Bhopal, India. Our environment clearly is a determinant of health. Social justice deals with issues such as slavery, discrimination, corruption, and economic fairness. Let me go back to here, okay. So social justice deals with worker health, living wages, basic human rights. And Paul Hawken was one that sort of said that environmental and social justice are really two sides of the same coin. Concerns about education, worker health, living wages, and basic human rights are inseparable from concerns about water, climate, soil, and biodiversity. The way we treat the earth affects all people, and how we treat each other is reflected in how we treat the earth. When we show respect for one, we are likely to show respect for the other. Historically, social injustice has been with us since the dawn of humankind. But environmental injustice, especially the assault on natural resources, the production of waste, and the heating of the planet, are relatively new phenomena, starting with the Industrial Revolution and propelled by economic growth since World War II. Earlier this year, I was interviewed by conservative Oregon radio talk show host Lars Larson, who said, "I've never seen coal dust blowing off a coal train," and he repeated this three or four times during the interview. The reality is that a lot of coal dust, about 3% of the load, as Martin said, blows off in transit. I like this quote from a vice president of Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. "Plumes of coal dust can often be seen from passing coal trains. When standing near the rail lines, I have often had to avert my face when a loaded coal train passes to avoid being pelted with coal particles." So who lives alongside the tracks? Well, of course, it's generally low-income families that have little choice but to live where homes and apartments are cheaper. And it is poor children who are playing outdoors in these neighborhoods who disproportionately breathe coal dust containing heavy metals like mercury, lead, arsenic, and cadmium. We know that mercury is a potent neurotoxin. These same families breathe diesel emissions, which contain nitrogen oxides, a major contributor of smog and ground-level ozone. Ozone is formed by nitrous oxides and volatile organic compounds in the presence of sunlight and heat. Ozone causes asthma in children by inflaming and narrowing airways. Diesel emissions also cause chronic bronchitis and emphysema in the elderly, and are a trigger for heart disease, hypertension, and cancer, particularly lung cancer. Diesel engines emit very fine particles, 2.5 micron and smaller, to which a variety of toxic chemicals can attach, including benzene, formaldehyde, and 1,3-butadiene, which are linked to cancer, endocrine disruption, and developmental delays. These substances are inhaled and go all the way down to the smallest areas of the bronchial tree, where they can easily diffuse across the alveoli into the bloodstream and thence to the brain and the reproductive organs. So if families near the track have vegetable gardens, they run the risk of ingesting even more of these toxics. Consider the irony of growing your own organic garden for health reasons and then to have them coated with heavy metals and toxic ash. For people living within earshot of the tracks, the incessant rumbling of the heavy trains and the piercing whistles contribute to sleep disorders, that's no big surprise, but also to cardiovascular disease, hypertension, stroke, and an exacerbation of mental health disorders such as anxiety and depression. Coal also contains polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, known to be toxic to fish and causing liver disease, lower reproductive rates, and abnormal heart development in fish. Often rail lines follow the flat terrain alongside the rivers. People who fish these rivers daily for food tend to be poor people, immigrants, and Native Americans. What Asia burns in their power plants comes back to haunt us as blowback of mercury, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, ozone, and 50 other toxic chemicals. And these land on our water resources, and they run off into our rivers and our lakes and our reservoirs, and they contaminate the fish we eat and the water we drink. Toxic chemicals from coal trains combined with the residue of chemicals already in the sludge on the bottom of our rivers. Think of this. The average American eats 7 pounds of fish per year, but a tribal river people eat 310 pounds of fish per year, an astounding amount. A recent study on the Columbia River showed that high levels of polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, and mercury in resident fish like sturgeon and walleye were up to 3,000 times the toxic health advisory level. How ironic that these indigenous peoples who contribute the least to pollution are the most impacted by the pollution. Well, coal companies regularly talk about the creation of jobs, and actually Martin covered this pretty well, and I think I'm going to skip over the fact that there's really going to be a net loss of jobs if these coal export terminals are passed in the Northwest. I'll just say that organic farmers cannot promote their crops as organic if they're coated with coal dust, and mint growers can't even wash the coal off their mint leaves without ruining the crops. So this isn't about job creation, as they claim. It's about coal industry profits. You know, it's like a duh. It's a classic example of special interests versus the common good. The Financial Times of London calls coal exports, quote, the last gasp of a fuel with no long-term future. Well, hearings held by DEQ and other government agencies in the Northwest have very narrowly focused on the local and the regional impacts of coal exports, but not on the broader issue of flooding Asian markets with cheap coal. Coal exports will only encourage China and India to build more coal-burning power plants. Coal burning is the single biggest source of CO2 emissions worldwide. The upper graph here shows the CO2 emissions as detected from Antarctic ice cores and from the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. Total CO2 emissions were at 280 parts per million in the pre-industrial times, but then hit 350 parts per million in the late 1980s and have shot up to over 400 parts per million this year. Average global temperatures have already risen 1 degree centigrade and are expected to rise at least another 3 degrees centigrade this century. During summer months, heat waves are expected to become more intense, more frequent, and longer lasting. And so who is it that suffers the most in heat waves? Well, in this country, it's people without air conditioning, in poorly ventilated tenement buildings, particularly those who are elderly and frail. Overseas, the persons that are affected most by global climate change are those who live on the margins, near the equator, in areas prone to drought, and on low-lying islands. This slide illustrates what has become of the dense jungles of Sierra Leone, West Africa. 45 years ago, I used to drive a Land Rover through this area, dodging monkeys almost as much as we were dodging potholes. Now the jungle is dried out. Most of the foliage has disappeared, and the monkeys are long gone. In addition to heat waves, we can expect extreme weather, spreading infectious diseases, coastal flooding from rising sea levels, and declining air quality among the public health threats projected for a warmer world. Hurricanes are expected to increase both in intensity and duration, as ocean temperatures rise, adding energy to storms coming off the Gulf of Mexico, the Bay of Bengal, and along the eastern seaboard of the U.S. In the storm surge of Hurricane Katrina, over 1 million people were displaced and 1,800 died. The people who suffered the most were poor people living in the lower Ninth Ward, which housed the largest percentage of African Americans in New Orleans. As global temperatures rise, the global water cycle is accelerated, and the amounts of water vapor in the atmosphere increases. The result is more intense downpours and flooding, even when total precipitation remains unchanged. This graph from the UN Millennium Ecosystem Assessment shows the number of major floods occurring each decade from 1950 to 2000. Droughts stress our forests and challenge our agriculture and lead to food scarcity. Last year, much of the Midwest experienced their most severe drought of three quarters of a century. Around the world, over 1 million people have no access to safe drinking water. For these people, drought can be a matter of life or death. The effects of global warming can also be seen in the rise in sea levels, which are up 7 inches since 1903. The best estimate is that sea levels will rise about 19 inches in this century, even if global greenhouse gas emissions are stabilized. Sea levels have risen because of the expansion of warmer ocean water and, of course, also the melting of polar and glacial ice. Pacific Islanders and people living in river deltas like Bangladesh have had their homes flooded and been forced to relocate. This map shows that much of Africa can expect a shorter growing season, as shown by the area in orange. It illustrates that the people of sub-Saharan Africa, who are already living on the margin with subsistence farming and whose children are often malnourished, are expected to take the brunt of climate change. But Africa is not alone. Rising temperatures will change agricultural practices around the world. The New York Times reported just 2 days ago that scientists expect a 2% drop in agricultural production each decade for the rest of this century. Grapes, orchards, potatoes can be quite temperature sensitive. Rice yields fall by 10% for every 1 degree centigrade rise in nighttime temperature. Insect populations will also increase with rising temperatures. Climate change also leads to the spread of infectious diseases. Mosquitoes, which can carry malaria and other diseases, are highly sensitive to temperature changes. Higher temperatures boost their reproductive and biting rates and lengthen their breeding season. Increasing temperatures may also expand the range of mosquitoes at higher elevations above 4,500 feet and in more northern latitudes, putting at risk previously unexposed populations. It's estimated that malaria causes about 1 million deaths per year, mainly in children under the age of 5, again targeting the most vulnerable populations. I get a kick out of this slide from 2005. It's a CDC map indicating that dengue fever mosquitoes don't cross the U.S.-Mexican border. Boy, you know, we have really tough border patrol these days. In reality, a study a few years later showed that 30% of Brownsville, Texas residents had a positive titer for dengue. By now, dengue has shown up in Key West and even in New England. Flooding, drought, and the rise of rising sea levels is leading to the displacement of populations. It has been estimated that currently 25 million people globally have been displaced for environmental reasons, comparable to the number of people that have been displaced by war. Most of these people are living in slums or in camps for refugees or internally displaced persons, not exactly healthy environments. Well, coal is so dirty and toxic to our planet and to our climate and to our health that it should be permanently sequestered in the ground. Well, how fortuitously that's where it already is. The mining and the shipping and the burning of coal is irresponsible. But it's really more than that. I believe it is immoral. We know a lot more about toxic fuel than we did in the days of Charles Dickens. To promote coal in the 21st century is to defy the laws of physics and chemistry, to ignore very serious health concerns, and to endanger life on this planet. Nationally and globally, we are moving toward renewable energies to replace fossil fuels. Germany supplied 23% of its electricity from renewables last year and is on target to increase to 35% by 2020, with plans to go to 80% renewables by 2050. And the impact of Physicians for Social Responsibilities is really dependent upon coalition building. And since Martin mentioned this, I'll move on to this. Just a word about divestiture. I would encourage you to divest yourself of all fossil fuel stock and companies that are contributing to the problem and not to the solution. Also talk to your universities, denominations, synagogues, et cetera, about divesting their funds out of fossil fuels.